there is one thing that's always on people's minds. You can't escape it. It's a common thread. Doesn't make it bad. It's just the way that our world is kind of wound sometimes. And finances are one of those things that is that common thread. There's been a lot of conversation about finances, especially in the last 3 or 4 years. Anybody heard anything about a bank bailout? Yeah. I mean, if you were unhappy with any of the banks, listen, I don't blame you. But I am pleased to say that things are a whole lot better than they were, not just for banking, but believe it or not, there's some very good trends, as it were. And what I want to do this morning is just really kind of give an overview, but I did want to share some things that I had found. Maybe you've heard some of these, you hear all these great quotes, and I ran across a few about money that may or may not apply to some of us, and they're kind of a mishmash here. One person said, money is better than poverty, if only for financial reasons. I like that. Money is only loaned to a man. He comes into the world with nothing, and he leaves with nothing. It's very true, isn't it? Too many of us look upon Americans as dollar chasers. This is a cruel libel, even if it is reiterated thoughtlessly by the Americans themselves. That was Albert Einstein. The Bible tells us that the love of money is the root of all evil. There's nothing wrong with money. Boy, you get to loving it, you got your love misplaced. I don't like money, actually, but it does quiet my nerves. When I was young, I used to think that money was the most important thing in life. Now that I'm old, I know it is. No man's credit is ever as good as his money. We live in a world that is debt-ridden. I got to tell you, one of the things that I tell my folks, and you can ask, there will be three of them here helping serve. You can ask them. I say this all the time, and I apologize to any English teachers in the room. If it ain't right for the customer, it ain't right. What we're supposed to be doing as a trusted financial advisor is giving advice and making recommendations that are appropriate and helping solve financial concerns. It's not about just getting people into more debt. I know people that think that way, but I tell you, debt is really, really tough. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Just a couple of more. The Mint. And we visited the Mint in Washington, D.C. The Mint makes it first. It's up to us to make it last. Give that some thought. Money, this is Groucho Marx. I always enjoyed listening to him. Money frees you from doing things you dislike. Since I dislike doing nearly everything, money is very handy. However, a wise person said, make money your God, and it will plague you like the devil. That's the thought. Two more. Do not be fooled into believing that because a man is rich, he is necessarily smart. There is ample proof to the contrary. And I guess one of my favorite ones is this one. I have enough money to last me the rest of my life. Unless I buy something. So, noodle that one around a little bit. Well, I did want to talk a little bit about, from a financial overview, and I think I'm going to try to get four things up here. And this is really the four things that I thought we'd talk about. Because when you think about money, if you think about just a financial overview, there are really four things that I seem to hear a common thread about in what I do. I've been doing this. I originally got my insurance license in 1982. And I've gotten all those securities things. If you've ever gone on to check out your broker or advisor to see what kind of licenses or registrations to get on all those series things like Series 6, Series 7, I've got all those numbers. I had 6, 7, 24. I got a lot of different numbers. They don't mean anything to most people, but I studied hard for them. I passed the test. And so I guess it made me a little bit of qualified. But there are some things that we typically look at, and it really is these four things. So today I just want to talk a little bit about and just share some things from a risk, to talk about risk, and all types of risk about our dollars, and do a little bit of a review out of 2011, and maybe ask some questions about 2012, and then maybe reveal, take a chance at maybe a bit of a forecast or a preview or a guess, okay? And then realize our need to do some, you know, a few things. So with that, we'll get started. Hopefully, Andrew, if you just want to push buttons, feel free. Oh, there it is up there. How do you deal with risk? You can avoid it, or you can manage it. And a lot of people try to avoid risk. When I say risk, what does that mean to you? You feel free, shout it out. When I say risk, what's that mean to you? Taking a chance? How much I can lose? Yeah? You ever think about how much you could gain? But did you ever think that there may be more than one type of risk? And actually, there are five types of risk that I like to examine. And I call them the five eyes of risk. And they fall into these five categories, maybe. There's interest rate risk, income tax risk, inflation risk. Andrew, if you just want to go ahead and push the buttons and get those five up there, that's fine. Thank you. Hey, I'm going to have to pay him extra. But there's what I call the five eyes of risk. First of all, there's interest rate risk. If your money is only earning an interest rate, do you realize you're at high risk? It doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter if you're 18 or 118. If you have a specific purpose, I like to ask folks, what's the intended use of your dollars? If we don't ask that question, then we're just throwing darts at a dartboard. We're not doing the right things. No, nobody is. But you really have to define what you want to accomplish. You can't dance around it. You got to define it. And if you're only earning an interest rate, you're really at risk. And the reason is because historically, if I were to ask you this question, what would you like to see in interest rates? The answer would be what? Up! Get them up there. How many would you love to see, like we had around 1980, 81, 82, those double-digit interest rates on money markets? How many would you love to see those? It's not going to happen. I need to be the bearer of bad news. That's not going to happen because with that, you get something else. Somebody said it. Inflation. It's up there too, isn't it? So interest rates historically have been pretty low when you think about it. There's been some periods where they've been up and down. But over the last 220 years, there's only been about 30, 35 years where they've actually been what we would say is high. Typically, the longer term rates are low. Then you got the second type of risk you have to consider, and that's income tax. I do have some good news for you. This is 2012. Next year is 2013. That is the 100th anniversary of the income tax as we know it. Isn't that great news? You know what the better news is? When it came around in 1913, and I'm still hanging on to this, it was temporary. Temporary. Hang on to it. It just may be temporary. But you know what? There's a lot of risk because a lot of people don't factor that in. They try to get the best rate and they don't even think about the income tax they have to pay. And there are ways, as I like to say, to legally discriminate on behalf of yourself. There are some tax breaks. There are some things that you can do. And I'm not going to get into products and all that. You may be familiar with some of them if I mention them, be it annuities. There are some mutual funds that have some tax advantages. There's a lot of different things out there where you can get a little better rate than you can on any of our CDs or savings accounts. I'll be very honest with you. And keep it safe from taxes. But then you got that third thing, that's inflation that somebody said earlier. And it's that thing that kind of creeps around with interest rates. It's like a nasty shadow, and one shadows the other at any given time. And when those rates were up, you know, in 1981, when I graduated from college, interest rates on a money market, you didn't even have to lock it up. On average in this country, it was 15%. That's pretty good. Know what inflation was that year? 21. And you have to look at a couple different types of inflation. I like to call it headline and headache. Because you got the headline inflation that says it's averaged 3.5 or 4% since 1950. But then there's the headache inflation. And that's the stuff I really use. Like, I was sick recently, and I had to go get some prescriptions. Anybody in here get a prescription filled at any time? Anybody have any health care issues? Probably every hand. Those costs have gone up a little more than 3.5 to 4% per year, right? Anybody put gas in a car? It's gone up a little bit more than 3.5 or 4%, haven't it? So there's a lot of things that really are headache inflation. But you have to factor that in. And once you take those first three, you come up with a math problem. And then the math problem is real simple. Take the rate minus income tax minus inflation, and that gives you three R's, the real rate of return. And so when you were earning 15% in the money market and paying 21%, you are already losing 6% on your purchasing power. And that's the critical thing about inflation. You have to keep your purchasing power. Even if you hid it under your mattress, if you took $100, put it under your mattress this year, and pulled it out next year, it would buy you $97 worth of goods and services. That's inflation. Of course, I like the definition I saw once about inflation. And it said inflation is when you pay $15 for a $10 haircut that you used to pay $5 for when you actually had hair. Right? That's inflation. So you've got interest rate risk, you've got income tax risk, you've got inflation risk. And then once you've settled out what you're really trying to do with your money, now you have to make an investment. It may be in a savings account, but now you're ready for that fourth type of risk, and you have to understand that based on what you want your money to do for you, there is an associated risk on the investment piece with it. Some people say, I don't want to lose any of my principal. Make sure it's all FDIC insured. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but typically, in a crowd of this size, if I were to ask the question, how many of you absolutely, you want 100% safety and I got to have FDIC? You'd raise your hand. Don't raise your hand. But if I were to ask that, almost every hand would go up. And it's really interesting because people say, well, I have 100% safety. Here's a question I like to ask. How many of you in here have ever, you either currently do or you ever bought a house? Anybody ever own a home? Yeah, a lot of hands, right? What's the name of the piece of paper? I got to look here. I don't carry a lot of cash. Remember Lisa? She's the one who carries cash. She gave me an allowance. I've got $20. I will give that $20 to anybody who can answer this question. Notice I'm putting it away and putting it back because I think I might have the upper hand here. What's the name of the piece of paper that you sign or you signed in the past when you got your mortgage? What's the name when you bought your home? What's the name of the piece of paper that you signed that guaranteed your house would never go down in value? Well, what's the name of that paper? Real quick. $20. Not deed? No. Yeah, there's not one. Right? There's not a thing that we sign. But here's the interesting thing. There's no guarantee it'll never go down in value. But you know what's so interesting? I did it too. It's the American dream. Get into tons of debt. for a house? It's going to cause you trouble. The water heater is going to go out. The electricity will go off. The air conditioning will go out. You have to replace windows. You have to put in carpet. There's going to be water damage. Your dog will do things in the house that you're going to have to handle. Right? But here's what we do. We take an idea that says, I want to own a home. I want, right? I want to own a home. And we make an investment. And we go borrow the money for that investment. And we may buy a house that's worth $100,000. And by the time we pay it back, we pay $200,000 back. Maybe a little bit more. On something that's guaranteed. What? Nothing. There's no guarantee it'll go up or down. And there's no FDIC on that, by the way. But you know, we take that and it's the biggest investment any of us will ever make. And there's no guarantees. But when it comes to doing something else, we feel like, well, I've got to have that safety net. So that's what happens. So that's investment risk a little bit. And then the final thing is the insurance risk. And I'm not talking about going out and buying insurance. But what I am saying is you can insure against all of these risks. And that's kind of the wrapper that brings it all together. Just a couple of ideas. You know, I talked about you can invest or insure against only having an interest rate. If you have something else, you're helping ensure that your money will grow. Yeah, you're taking a little bit of investment risk because there's absolutely no guarantee on everything. So if you only want FDIC, you're going to be in that interest rate pool, right? And that's that risk. There's ways to insure against inflation. But you have to decide. We run into a lot of people that say, you know, the interest rates have come down and they really hurt me because I was taking an income. There are things that will get you better income than the 0.5% or whatever we can pay. There are things that will today get you 3, 4, 5, 6% and keep it relatively safe, but there's no FDIC. So you have to decide what's more important. Your income or your principal. And we have to make that decision. My grandmother was age 85 when she got into her first mutual fund. Because inflation had happened, grandma was on a fixed income, grandpa died in 1965. Now it's almost 25 years later. And grandma, because of inflation and only living on Social Security and a widow's pension from the railroad, was getting to a point where she was having too much month left at the end of the money. And she had to make that decision. And I had to ask her, Grandma, if you bought a cow for milk, what would be your biggest concern? How much milk you'd get on a regular basis or the price of the cow on any day? She understood that. She said, well, I wouldn't care about the price of the cow. I need the milk. So Grandma went to a mutual fund that gave her milk, gave her income, and the underlying investment stayed pretty stable. It fluctuated a little bit every day, but she got a better income. And I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just telling you, there's some of those things that we can insure ourselves against. The rates, the markets, the economy, they're all very cyclical. They run in cycles. They're very temporary, and they all have recovered. So as bad as it gets, for any of those things, the rates, the markets, the economy, they've all recovered. And we also, and I'm going to skip through a couple things as I watch the clock. I kind of over-prepare. I'm going to go through just a couple of things here. But we also have to insure against something that is not run. It does not run in cycles. It is not temporary. And it doesn't always recover. Anybody have any idea what I'm talking about? You can sum it up in one word. Health. Do you realize that so many people make so many plans with their dollars that then a health situation hits them and they didn't plan for that? They didn't want to buy a certain kind of insurance because, one, it would never happen to them. Two, it happened in my family where my mom always said, if anything ever happened to your dad, yeah, I'd take care of him. And my dad agreed, yep, she'd take care of me. And that was the plan. Well, that was not the best plan necessarily. You have to make better plans. And you have to understand that. Give you some quick facts. You know that over 12 million people today are receiving long-term care in some way, shape, or form? Think about nursing homes, right? Out of that 12 million, only 18% of those are in nursing homes. 82% they're at home or in assisted living. Nursing home stays average 2.5 years, but it depends what you have. If you're in there for rehabilitation, or if you're in there for something like what my dad had, which was Alzheimer's. Dad went to the nursing home in 1997. He got diagnosed in 1993. He died in 2003. He was in the nursing home quite a while. And we knew he wasn't coming out. But you have to provide for that. Here's a question for you. Would you do business with an insurance company that if they had one claim, it may break them? Do you do business with that insurance company? No, none of us would. But so many people are doing that as it relates to health. Because they've got all these deposits, they've got assets, they've got things in a portfolio, and stocks, bonds, mutual funds, whatever. They've got a lot of that, but they haven't done anything to protect it in the event of some kind of catastrophic illness or health situation. And they think Medicare will cover it. Only covers a little bit, less than 2% of all long-term care expenses. And then they think, well, Medicaid. Anybody know anything about Medicaid? Medicaid is the best health care system in this country. Absolutely the most all-inclusive health care system in this country. Unfortunately, it has the highest deductible. Because to qualify for it, you got to be poor. To qualify for it, the deductible is everything else that you have. Now, who wants that? And it's like the old preacher said, I'm not trying to scare you, just prepare you. But those are things that we got to think about when it comes to our finances and kind of the state of what's going on in the lives of the financial country and for each of you, perhaps. Well, I want to get into a bit of a review. We talked about risk. I want to hit a little bit of a review. Andrew, I'll just let you finish this page. It ends with government. A few attention grabbers over the course of 2011. Really, it was a tale of two halves of 2011. The first half of the year, there were relatively calm markets, be it the stock market, the bond market. The economy was up and down a little bit. It was relatively calm. The last 6 months, it went crazy. It was volatile. There were people all upset that had money invested, and they're trying to, you know, the idea, if you do invest, what's the idea? Buy low and sell high. There were a lot of people doing the opposite because they got a little scared. I had people say, Greg, this is like a roller coaster ride. That's right. And the only people that ever got hurt on a roller coaster ride were those that tried to get off in the middle of the ride. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because remember, it runs in cycles. But once you define what you need to have happen with your dollars, then you'll better understand what type of ride or investment you need to be on. So that happened. That happened with the stocks, the bonds. You hear things about currency, I'm sure, on the TV. We have a lot of talking hairdos out there that talk to us every night through that big box. They read very well. They don't really understand it, but these talking hairdos, boy, they can read, can't they? And they get us all scared, and they talk about markets. You ever hear this? One of them will say, the market soared today. You ever hear that? Oh, it soared. Or the market plummeted today. The market plunged today. You ever hear that? How many of you, if you ever got on this elevator right out here and your two choices or soar or plunge. You ride that elevator? So they use words that kind of scare us, it gets our attention. But why did all this happen? Well, there was a real focus, and it shifted from economic growth to government finances. And the government is not the answer. There's a little bit more. Andrew, you can go on. There's a little bit more. We saw a real sharp move going down in rates and yields again from the Treasury. And those impact mortgage loans. Those impact rates that you earn on your dollars in savings accounts or certificates of deposit. The bond market is affecting European countries, which really means, again, it's impacting rates worldwide. As we move on, another bit of a review. Compared to the rest of the world, our stock market did pretty well. And in fact, a lot of companies have been able to raise things over 15%. That's not bad. Now, that's just 1 year. But you realize since the year my mom was born, the market, the stock market, has averaged right at 10%. She was born in 1926. You say, wow, I can remember the Depression. I can remember World War II. I can remember the Korean conflict. What about Vietnam? What about recessions and everything else? Even with all that, with dividends and everything else. So it's pretty stable over time once you decide where you want to go. And again, 60% of the, you can go ahead, 60% of the, what we call the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's, those are 500 companies, 60% of those were way ahead of 2010. So that's good. A couple other quick observations. We can go right through this next one. Stocks are the new bonds. A lot of people got a little tired, but because of better rates and yields on bonds, a lot of people are taking they're investing in those. Back to inflation, protecting your purchasing power is critical. We talked about that. It seems like the government's financial and debt problems, they're all our problems now, aren't they? They're everybody's problem. And that's a shame. Surprisingly, I put a little smiley face there, the average household income in Washington, D.C. area surpassed that of Silicon Valley, where all the technology was. On average in Silicon Valley, $83,000 of income, $85,000 in Washington, D.C. So by growing government, they're growing incomes there. So if you want to move there, that's the place to go, I guess. And by the way, if you're ever on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, in October, the 7 billionth person was born on the planet. But here's the thing that's interesting about that. 43% of those 7 billion people are all under the age of 25. So banks, manufacturing, service companies, they're all listening to what those needs are for those folks. So we have to pay attention to that. Well, what are some key questions as we finish up here? First of all, and I listed really five, and two of them are in this first one. Enslavement to debt. Who's going to buy? Did you hear the news? The government now wants, President Obama has said, we need to have our debt ceiling increased by another $1.3 trillion. We just did that. More debt upon more debt upon more debt doesn't help the debt problem with the government or us. So who's going to pay for that? Secondly, there's almost that much in euros overseas. They're asking the same thing. Third question, the European recession, it does impact us. How long will it last? Economic concerns, how well will we perform this economy in elections? What message will the country deliver in November to our fabulous representatives? Oh my. Well, I'll reveal a quick forecast here. As I said, it's as much of a preview and a guess, but here we go. We don't really see any recession for our economy, and that's good. The reason is because recently there's been good news. We hope it lasts. Again, hope is not a strategy, but we hope it lasts. And there's been some good news around employment, around economic news. And yet, we're going to see growth that's still going to be a little bit lower than it normally is. You know, we've talked about how the first half of 2011 was calm, and then it got all out of control. That could be reversed this year, so we'll see about that. We really think that longer-term interest rates are going to go a little higher. Short-term, near zero. You know why? When you go to Washington in the fall, thank the Fed, because they're controlling. Isn't it amazing we have a central bank? We don't have any central restaurant. We don't have any central phone company. We don't have any centralized fuel or service companies. But by golly, we got a centralized bank, and they just get in our way. And it's not always, by the way, I'm not defending the banks, but it's not always our fault. There's a lot of regulations. If you ever run into a situation with us or any other bank, the regulations we have to deal with, unbelievable. So there's none of those companies, there's none of those centralized things yet. What else? Stock market performance, maybe not be at 15% on average, but we're thinking maybe close to 8 to 10%. Inflation still remains a little stubborn. We see it going a little bit higher, perhaps a little bit. So protect your purchasing power. And then finally, the elections. I didn't know how else to say it other than I think there's going to be turnout and turnover. And that began to happen in 2010, and it could be a trend that continues to happen. There may be people here saying, well, what about term limits? We have term limits. Go vote. Okay? That's all I'm going to say about that. So the last thing, what to do? Well, I think we got to realize some things. Realize that you and I both need to maybe rethink, revisit, and redo. And rethink our living well-being. In other words, our finances, our whole discussion. Rethink that a little bit. But also rethink the life well-being. When was the last time we looked beyond our checkbooks or our portfolios or any kind of statements and really examined our life? When was the last time? Secondly, revisit. Revisit the living well-being. Continue to get knowledge. Continue to get little updates like this. I hope it's helped a little. And understand your options for your finances and other things. But then also revisit your life well-being. Continue to get knowledge and understanding about life. And really, what matters about your life? I'm not promised another heartbeat. Really examine that. And then redo. About your living well-being, you may need to make some necessary tweaks about your finances or anything like that. But as far as your life well-being, you may need to make some necessary tweaks there too. What are you going to gain or keep? Well, that applies to finances and life. And then you have to ask the question, who's really in control? We've talked a lot about governments. We've talked about banks. Is it the banks that are in control? Is it money managers? Is it the politicians? Is it you? I would tell you this, none of the above. Only God's in control. Nothing has ever surprised Him. Nothing ever will. And we have to reach a point in our life where we realize God's in control. Took me to age 18, when at age 18 I got diagnosed with cancer. And I was given 2 years to live. Lord willing, I'll be 54 in a few weeks. Remember that. I can give you the calendar date if anybody wants to send me a card. But I finally realized that because they gave me 2 years to live. It was almost 2 years later when I really came to an understanding about who Jesus Christ not was, but who He is and who He was at that time in my life and how He could impact my life by not trying to be in control, and turning that over to God through the saving work of Jesus Christ. And I would ask you to examine that and maybe rethink, revisit, and redo your thoughts about that. Because I got to tell you, He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And perhaps a life with Him, guaranteeing the greatest return you can ever get, also known as heaven. Perhaps that's the understanding and first decision that you really need to make for 2012. And for those of you that need to have a conversation with somebody, there's a lot of us here who would love to help. So with that, I'll thank you, Roger, and turn it back to you. Thank you, folks.